Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody, or welcome to the show, I should say. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and my name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours till noon, we'll talk about car repair, tires, shock absorbers, when do I do that, when do I do this, all that kind of stuff. This show is brought to you by a group of shops that I have handpicked. These are guys that I know. These are guys that I know the right difference between right and wrong. They've been in business, well, all of them over, well, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. I'll give you a good example. Action Auto Repair has been in business since 1983. I met Tom in 1983. I know Tom really, really well. He's on I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. He has ASE Master Technicians. He knows right from wrong, and he has staff in the shop that makes sure that his right or wrong it matches their right or wrong. It's just the way it is in the auto repair industry. So if you're if you're looking for a good shop and you're anywhere near I-17 and Deer Valley Road, then Action Auto's a good place to go. And the phone number, 602-508-0960. There's four lines open, 602-508-0960. And we're going to go to Ian. Ian, good morning. How can I help you? Okay.
2004 Cadillac Escalade.
Okay.
ESV.
He's coming in and out. Hey, Ian.
Can you hear me now better?
Well, yeah, you got to get us off of Bluetooth or something. But, yes, I can hear you now. Go ahead. Let's start over.
Yeah, I'm on a landline, and I had it on my speakerphone. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I've got a 2004 Cadillac Escalade ESV. It's got a direct short somewhere. I've done all the amp draws on all the fuse boxes, and nothing gets rid of the – it goes 4.4, and then – I let it sit with the voltometer on there for about an hour, and it'll go down to 1.9, and it just sits there and stays there, runs the battery down, brand-new battery. Cadillac had it for 26 days and handed it back to me, said they couldn't find the problem.
Well, anytime that you have that kind of a draw, that kind of a short, then you have an amp meter hooked up to it, yes?
Yes.
I'm missing half of what you're saying to me.
Yes, I had the amp meter hooked up to it.
And you have the amp meter between like the positive post and the positive terminal of the cable, yes?
I have the amp meter. I've got the negative cable disconnected, the positive side of the multi-tester to the negative post, and then the other side of that to the ground.
Okay. Okay. What I do is I get the draw to be there, so you know it's there, and then I just disconnect things one at a time, and I plug it back in. I disconnect it, and I wait 60 seconds, and somebody's watching the meter. Nothing's changed, and I put it back in. Or you can some guys will do disconnect one at a time. I'll disconnect the ECM. I'll disconnect the alternator. I'll disconnect the ignition switch. I'll disconnect this part, half of the fuse panel. I'll disconnect the other half of the fuse panel. I'll pull this relay. I'll do this. I'll do that. You'll sooner or later be able to take away the draw, and you'll know what circuits it's on.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a wiring diagram, and you'll figure that out.
Well, that's what I've been trying to do for 3 months now. I did exactly what you said, and pulling has three fuse boxes, and pulling all the fuses, nothing took the amperage down lower than 1.9.
Then it has to be at the starter.
The starter.
It has to be, because that's where the power goes to the starter first, and then the starter feeds all those other circuits. And so you're telling me that you've had every fuse, every relay out of this car.
That's correct.
And you still haven't haven't dropped the amp draw. Well, the power positive cable goes directly to the 12 o'clock position on the starter. So go down there, take the positive cable off, take all the other wires off that are connected to a fuse link. So
okay.
You're going to take the big one off, take the small ones off, take the big one, put it back on, and then you're going to put your amp meter in the middle of the two or the three wires that are left on the top of the 12 o'clock of the solenoid, and you're going to hook up number one and see if there's an amp draw. Take it off, hook up number two, try that.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah. I wanted to let you know, too, Mark, I also I Googled it and did the check the alternator for bad diodes too, because they said that could pull your battery down.
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
No, a diode is just a one-way valve. Electricity flows one way. Everybody's got these ideas. Mr. Google out there is. So the question is, Mark, have you ever fixed this, a major draw like this that'll draw the battery down in hours by replacing the alternator? No. No. You know, okay. The alternator, the diodes are just one-way valves. That's all. Power goes out but can't come back in. So that way power goes to the charging system. Power goes to the battery from the alternator. But then the battery cannot draw back on the alternator. And besides, if you disconnected the alternator, the short would go away because you've lost the connection.
Right, so, yeah. I took the alternator completely out of the harness, and I still had the draw.
Okay. Where do you live? What part of town do you live in?
I live in East Mesa, Signal Butte, and Broadway Road.
Okay. I'd call Thompson's and ask. I mean, you can continue to play with this as much as you want. The guys that are really good in this, I'd call Thompson's in Mesa and ask him if he wants this. And don't forget all the other story. I've got a big draw on my Cadillac Escalade. It'll draw the battery down from a fully charged to this point in this many hours or whatever. And just say, I've got an electrical problem, and I'll show you how it happens, but I can't tell you how to fix it. You can call him. You can call Larry Harker's Auto and challenge Bob out there. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, so he's quite a ways away from you. Blackwell's up north. Blackwell Automotive's up north. Those guys, these are the guys. Oh, and you can even go to Scottsdale, and you can go over to Bell Automotive, which is at the 101 in McDowell, and Craig could figure this out. This isn't that hard, but you have to have walked in these shoes before.
Right.
And so you walked in these shoes, when we don't do it the way you do it, we all have inductive amp probes.
Yes,
so
sir.
We're just going to go all the way around the positive cable and all the leads and all the things that are coming off the starter, and pretty soon we're going to wrap that inductive amp probe around a wire that goes, boom, 30 amps, and then you look in your drawing and you find out what that thing feeds.
That's what
and
I was
hoping
for.
You move on from there.
I can't believe that Cadillac couldn't find it in 26 days.
Okay, let's do this. It pains me to stick up for dealers, but I'm going to do that. Let's wait till we fix it, and then we'll have the answer. And you'll have the answer as well. So you'll have the opportunity to go back in a nice way to the service manager and say, hey, you guys had this for 26 days and you couldn't figure it out. And this is the repair order. And I asked him to just write a book about what he did and how he did it and how he found it, blah, blah, blah. And here it is. I just thought maybe you could learn. And maybe there would be some kind of a discount associated with the fee that you charged me.
Right on. Well, I'm going to do the starter thing that you said. If that doesn't work, take it to this Thompson's, you say, out here in East Mesa?
Yeah. You're going to call him first and just say, I've got a draw that draws down the system. And don't tell him anything else.
Okay.
I've got something I can – the key – now let's talk about one more thing. The battery fully charged should be about 12.5 to 13 volts.
Yes,
fully
it
charged.
Is. Brand
okay,
new.
When you start, okay, when you start the car up, the alternator should be somewhere between 13 and 14 volts. So
yes,
we're
it
still
is.
Connect. Okay, so we got an alternator, and we've got it charging, and so that sets the standard, and you can say that. But if I park it, then all of a sudden, the next morning, it's dead. Is that the rest of the story?
Yeah, it'll run down in a couple hours.
Okay, all right. Have you gone back there and taken the gas cap off the fuel tank and listened and see if the fuel pump's buzzing after the key's in your pocket?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, you said you pulled everything out of the fuse panel, which would include the fuel pump relay. So
right.
If you pulled the fuel pump relay, then obviously the fuel pump wouldn't be running.
Exactly.
Now, did anybody do any work on this electrical system in the month or two before all hell broke loose?
Well, that's what I was I'm trying to, you know, drag the drenches of my mind about that. The only thing I did was change a light bulb in the right front light bulb, running light.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about somebody put in a stereo with a big boom box and, you know, 15 amplifiers and,
no,
and an alarm system or anything like that at all is what we're talking about.
Yeah, no,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. All right, Ian, that'll do it. And then if you would be so kind as when you fix it, Mark at MarkSalem.com, maybe just PDF me a copy of the repair order so I can learn and we can talk about this later, too. Okay?
You bet. Thanks, Mark, very much.
All right. Good luck to you in 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We talked about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, and I talk about people that are really, really good, and I know the owners, and they've been there a long time. This show is not about my shop. That's why I never say the name of it. This show is about you. And it's been that way since 1988 in Phoenix. I started at another radio station in 1988, and I came to KKNT in 2011. I've been here since then. So what's that, 12 years? How's my math? Somewhere around there. 10, 12 years? 12 years. Thank you, Gil. And I've been here since then, and we average about 10 to 14 calls in a two-hour show, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. I'm really good at my husband says this, I say this, what do you think? Or my shop said this, what do you think? Or is this a fair price? And when it comes to pricing, I'm shying away from a lot of the pricing because right now in my industry, it's the Wild West with respect to pricing. I want to tell you, we hire people, the same people, to come in and we give them cell phones and we ask them to go out and do a labor survey for us. And most shops will tell you, some of them won't, but most shops will. And we're constantly moving that stuff. Maybe a year ago, parts, labor rates in an independent garage environment may have been $110 to $150. Today, they're north of $150. And so we're seeing $175 and we're seeing $200. We're also seeing that in the dealership arena. We're seeing $200 an hour. So we've seen a tremendous increase. But it has everything to do with the sophistication level of the repairs that we're getting. So it's not only the dealers are getting these repairs. We've got independent shops, chain stores get the same kind of repair problem that Ian just talked about in his Escalade, 04 Escalade with a draw that the battery's dead the next morning after he, you know, charges it up and hooks it up. And the next morning, the key's in his pocket and the car's outside. Nobody's driving it. Nobody's doing anything and it's dead. Those are the kinds of things. You're not going to shop by labor rate either. That's not a good idea. It's not, you just go and you say, go to the guy with the cheapest labor rate. Typically that won't work very well for you. And it's because his level of expertise is substandard to everybody else in town. So if he's at $85 an hour and Salem is at $175 an hour, there's going to be a big difference in how much we pay our techs and how qualified they are and how much certifications they have and all that other kind of jazz. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We go till 12 noon on car repair and stuff. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer. He'll say, would you like to talk to Mark? And you say yes. He'll ask you what your name is, and then he whispers your name in my ear, and then I'll go to you and say, hey, hello, John. What can we do for you? That kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up in Mesa. Nate knows more about diesels than anybody I've ever met in my life when you're talking about GM and Dodge and Ford, which is the three major lines that travel the freeways around here. He works on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. Keep in mind the word light diesel trucks, not the big trucks, just the light diesel trucks. He does all kinds of work, from oil changes to engine repairs, the electronics to engine codes, to, hey, I don't have any power, this thing won't start, it cranks but it doesn't hit, all that kind of stuff. He's really, really a die-hard diesel guy. So when you're looking for somebody who's a diehard diesel guy in the service, repair, and parts business, both domestic and foreign diesel light trucks, what we call light trucks, that's one ton and less, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. He's up there on the I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in Scottsdale. And he's a good guy. And if you have a diesel and nobody else can fix your problem, then I can tell you unequivocally, Nate can. So that's how it works. When it comes to car repair, right now what we're seeing a lot is people bidding stuff. And first of all, it should be no secret to many of you that the problem we've got right now is that you're not going to get an estimate over the phone from a shop. And here's why. We have to know the 8th and 10th digit of your VIN number to put it into our software in order to get the right car. We don't want to bid a car that has a V8 engine in it for an engine, take it out and put it back in, versus a four-cylinder. We have to have the right information. So the VIN number provides that information to us. Second of all, we then have to have our parts department or someone in our organization go out and access all the parts. they're typically going to put your VIN number in the software that we have that's proprietary. Otherwise, the auto repair industry has the software, not you, but this auto repair industry. So we have to go look up all the parts, and we have to guess on what parts you may or may not need. So if you come in and you say, I need you to bid replacing the head gaskets on my V8 Chevrolet, we need to know year, make, and model. We need to know what motor it's got, because some of them we don't want anything to do with once you've overheated them, because there is no fixing them. when you bring it in and the exhaust manifold and the exhaust manifolds are crispy and the spark plug wires are cooked, you just drove it too long, too far. There is no fixing that motor. We can put head gaskets in it, we can put fresh oil in it, and it's just not going to last long if it even starts and runs at the beginning. So most of us, and then when you open the hood and you can smell the overheat, and the customer said that this happened 2 weeks ago, it's done. The motor's cooked. That's the way it is. But there's lots of times where the shop will take a run at it. Let me go ahead and put some oil in each one of the cylinders. Let me do a wet compression check, and let's see if I can get the rings to come back together. Let's see if I can soften up the carbon that's holding the rings tight as opposed to expanding. I'll do this or I'll do that. Those are the kinds of things. But it's just very difficult. But here's what you can do. The other day, a customer of mine says, I heard what you did on the radio, and I did it, and he says, and you wouldn't believe how close the shop was. Okay, so what you do is you go onto Rock Auto, and you identify your parts, and whatever parts the shop is gonna bid. So it could be a rack and pinion, it could be this, or it could be that. You can go in there and you can find that. Then there's plenty of sites out there where you can actually create your own estimate. So you can punch in your year, make, and model of your car, and it says, what are you going to do? I'm in the steering section. What are you going to do? I'm going to replace the rack and pinion. Okay, which motor do you have? You punch this in, and it says, okay, that's 6.8 hours plus the alignment. So then you go, okay, well, the average repair shop in town right now might be 150, 175, or a little bit higher, so I'll use 170. So I'll do that times 6.8 hours, and that's the labor. And then I've got the power steering rack. That's the labor. That's the part. So I got the part and the labor. Now I have to use 10% for sales tax, and most of us are in the 5, 6, 7% range for shop supplies and environmental charges. You can create your own little estimate. Then you can go shop it. But shopping it is you're not going to get a lot of cooperations from shops to shop it. It's just really a matter of, can you shoot from the hip? And most guys will just pull up your vehicle, a vehicle like yours, in their database, and they'll say, oh, well, we just did that to Jones's car a year and a half ago. I'll just add another 10% because of price increases, and I'll give that as an estimate. So there's lots of things that we can do, but what we're not going to do is go through a very detailed estimate with 20 or 30 parts and have our parts department look up all those parts. And I'm talking about us, the industry, not my shop, us, the industry. We're just not going to do that. It's just not plausible. It's not feasible. There's no income producing mechanism in when we're doing estimates over the phone. But you can. Another thing you can do on tires. The other day, a friend of mine says, I got three estimates for tires. And I made one call, and I got him I saved him $300 from the lowest estimate. From the lowest estimate. And that was what we call street rate. That was me calling the shop and saying, hey, you got these tires in stock? Yeah. Four of them mounted and balanced. He told me. I called the customer back, and I said, here's this. And he goes, well, that beats my best offer. And I said, I thought so. But this is who's got it, and he said he'd do it for this much money. That's it. That in our industry, I would be called a bird dog. So I go out and find these things, but we don't do that. We just don't do that. So we don't charge the shop. We don't charge them. And oftentimes we're not the best shop in town. Oftentimes we will refer somebody to the best shop. But I'm just trying to help you, because when you get that rack and pinion assembly that's a $4,000 repair, you're going to want to bid it, and it's going to be very difficult to accomplish that goal. But you can do it on the internet, because you can find the rack and pinion for your car. You can take the retail number, what they call the list number, the highest number that you can find it out there, and add another 20% to it, just for fun, just to make sure you're okay. And then on the labor, there's plenty of websites that will say how many hours labor does it take to remove the power steering rack on my 04 Expedition. And they'll do that for you. They'll say, this is the hours, and then you just find out what average hour you're going to use. So you can do a lot of that. What really surprises me is the wide variations. Tires has been on, I don't know, on my hard drive for a long time, and I don't know why. We do sell tires, but we're certainly not in the class of like Discount Tire and many of the other tire stores that predominantly have that as their main call. So we've been doing lots of tires, and he called me up and he says, would you bid this tires for me? Well, this happens to be somebody who's married to my sister. And I said, sure. And my brother-in-law. So I said, I'm in the $1,400 range. And he goes, is that a family price or is that, you know, everybody that walks in the door? And I said, well, it's kind of the family price. He says, well, what's everybody walking in the door? And I said, add another $100 to it. He goes, okay, 15. He says, okay, I found somebody that will do all four of these tires for your 14, but I'm not in your city. He doesn't live in the Phoenix area. And I said, okay, well, that's a good deal. If it's four tires, mounted and balanced, FET tax, sales tax, installation, all that stuff, if that's it, then you know. And he said, okay. And so he called me back and he goes, yeah, he says that was a good number. And I said, good for you. So you could do the same thing. So the phone number, if you have a car question, is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil's going to answer the phone, and he's going to go, KKNT, would you want to speak to Mark? And you say yes, and he'll say, what's your name? And you tell him your name, and then he'll put you on hold. He won't hang up on you. He'll put you on hold, and then in my ear, he's going to say to me, Wayne's your next caller. And that's how it works. So 602-508-0960. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars, and we're talking about your issues with cars. I'm a master tech. I own my own shop. I've been in the car repair business since 1968 when I was in high school at Tempe High. And I pretty much know what I'm talking to. And I don't say the name of my shop because this isn't about my shop. It's about helping you wade through all of the minutia in our auto repair shop.
All about that demon automobile.
Welcome back, everybody. 33 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about cars. And if you'd like to join us, the phone number is 602-508-0960. Questions and comments and stuff about car repair. What we don't want to do is we don't want to have you call up and say the name of the shop and beat them up for 5 minutes or 2 minutes. We won't let you do that. But you can talk in a generic format. This is what happened. This is what took place. And I got my car back, and the bill was X amount of dollars, and I had exactly the same problem. What should I do next? And those are the kinds of things that we talk about. 602-508-0960. And we have a caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Henry.
Henry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got three questions from easy to hard. I'll start with the first one. When you see a car missing its rear bumper, you ever notice those gills on the side flapping around? Does that have to do with the recirc?
With the what?
The recirculation of the air. You know, so you take your bumper off, and you've got these plastic flaps on the side. They look like gills off a fish.
Okay.
They're rubber.
On the bumper?
Yeah, so take off the bumper of any car on the rear bumper. And on the left and right side, you're going to see these square vent kind of looking things that have that flap around when you drive. You've never seen those?
No, I don't have any. I don't have any. I mean, the trunk is airtight, but it's tied to the passenger compartment, so it's not anything
right.
To do with the trunk. We're not venting the trunk. Henry, I don't know what it is. Henry, I don't know what it is. I don't know what you're talking about. These flaps on every car, you say, that's kind of got me stumped there. You take the rear bumper off. Are you taking the entire bumper off, or are you just taking the bumper cover off, and there's slats inside the frame of the bumper?
You can see the frame. I've seen cars that have been crashed, and the guy's riding around without the bumper, and you see these weird gill-like things on the left and right side, and pretty much every car I've ever seen with it off has shown those.
Okay. I don't know, Henry. I'm north of 60 years old, and I've not seen what you're talking about. Henry, I just don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're seeing. I don't know how to answer your question. I don't know what they are. You're not going to see the frame from the back of any car. The frame is underneath the car. And when you talk about the frame, you might be talking about the cross member, and it's underneath the plastic bumper cover. And this cross member is part of the 5 mile an hour bumper assembly but I don't know why they would vent anything there. I don't know why there would be vents there. I just can't answer that. I'm sorry.
All right, I'll move on to number two. What is the correlation of a steering angle sensor in the ABS module? How do those two work together?
Why don't you give me more history, okay?
Okay, so I've got a 2012 Dodge Avenger, and when I go to make a right turn, I get a ABS activation kind of thing, like a grinding, and then I get a tone, but I don't see anything on the dashboard. And so I've been doing on my own research, and it says that if you're steering, I did the code read, and it said steering angle sensor initialized. It needs to be initialized.
Okay, I've never seen a steering angle angle sensor. I've never seen one. The steering angle sensor has a lot to do with one of the three alignments specifications that we're supposed to do. So you have caster and camber and tow. And so, but as far as ABS activation is concerned, I can't tell you how to fix an ABS code because the ABS code just simply says the problem is in the ABS system and now I have to go find it. So
okay.
The question is it possible that one right front tire is locking up as you make a right turn and as you brake at the same time because maybe the left side isn't working. Maybe the piston is seized on the left side and it's not working. So when you apply the brakes, then it sends pressure to the right front. And because the left front's not working, the right front works extra hard and it causes a pull to the right. So the repair would be fix the caliper on the passenger or on the driver's side if you're pulling hard to the passenger. So it's hard for me to tell you how to fix your car based through your eyes. And a code doesn't mean anything. We don't look at the code and automatically replace the ABS sensor on the right front tire. There is nothing further from the truth. And we get in the car, we plug in our scanner, we go drive it, and we just watch the operation of the ABS sensor. We might take an ohmmeter and we might test the ABS sensor and we might take it off of the backing plate and we might run a screwdriver across it to indicate that the tire is moving and look at this signal that's in our scanner. I mean, there's so much more to it and it's very technical and to track down an ABS code is on a 1 to 10 scale for a guy like me and a shop that I talk about. Tracking down an ABS code on a 1 to 10 scale is about a 2 or a 3. It's just not that big of a deal. So, Go ahead.
The last one. If your windshield has a gap in the seal from the bottom to the, you know, to the windshield itself and water gets in, where does that water go? Does it collect at the bottom? Is there somewhere in the bottom of the car that you can drain from the bottom of the car that would release any water or anything in it? Because I'm hearing sloshing that's not coolant-based.
So, do you see water on the ground?
No. And when it went through a car wash, I noticed when I opened up the hood that the rubber and everything around it was kind of deteriorated. So there were places where water could get in on the bottom of the windshield.
Well, the bottom of the windshield, as the water runs off the windshield and sheds downward, it's going to go into a trough, and we're going to drain it on each side. The trough's going to have drains on it.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So just get your blower out, your little electric blower, and open up the hood, or get your vacuum and plug your shop vac, plug your hose in backwards where it's blowing, and then crawl up in there and open up the hood, and just below the windshield wipers on both sides, you should find a couple of drains, and maybe they're filled with leaves, and maybe that's the sloshing you're hearing. If it was the sloshing inside the car, then it would be the heater core, and it would be the heater area where we're sloshing water back and forth. But you're talking about you went through a car wash, and unless the windows were down, then you wouldn't have water inside, so I'm going to assume it's in front of the windshield, below the windshield, and there's drains on both sides. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And you okay, Gil? We okay? Okay. All right, just checking. Anyway, when we talk about shops that I like and I refer to you to them, it's because I know them and because I trust them and because I use them. automatic transmission exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. He started in the two-speed power glides, and he went into the three speeds, and then he went into the overdrives, and then he went into the lockups. He went into the seven-speed transmissions. The fundamental way the car shifts, the transmission is shifted, has changed. It's changed from vacuum to throttle pressure to speed, and now the computer controls just about everything. But to make it happen is the same as it was before. We either did it with vacuum, or we did it with mechanical linkage, or with some electronic device. So automatic transmission exchange has been in the area since 1968. They're really good at, if you call and make an appointment, they'll take a quick drive with you, but you cannot take one of the, Phil calls me and he says, tell them they can't take my technician for an hour until it actually happens. You have to be able to make it happen so they can feel it and see it. They'll watch you drive, and then they're going to want to drive, and this whole thing should be 15 or 20 minutes long at the most. But automatic transmission exchange is at 40th Street in Washington, and he's a good guy. On the other side of the world, we have Auto Dynamics. Chuck has been around in this shit facility since 1982, and I've known Chuck since 1968. Chuck and I started in gas stations together and for a very long, and I was in high school. He was a little older than I am, but he knows right from wrong, and he knows technicians, and he knows what's right and how to sell the appropriate stuff, and how not to, and make sure your staff, your technicians, your service writers, your general managers don't sell unusual or unnecessary stuff. So the only place in Sun City that I can vouch that's trusted, been around a long time, family owned and operated, is Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. When it comes to making a complaint about a shop, that if it's a big ticket and it's the first time you've ever used the shop, or the shop's just opened up, you might want to contact your credit card company and just ask them to put a hold on the payment. Just hold on the payment. Sometimes when they wave it through, wave your car through, it's a done deal. Sometimes it's not. You'll just have to decide depending on which credit card you used. And it's always a good idea to pay with a credit card, because you can dispute that charge down the road. For instance, if you paid to have something done and it isn't done, then you took it to shop number two and they fixed it and they commented on shop number one's repair on the work order, and you have a document that says the symptom to shop number one and the symptom to shop number two was the same. Number one charged X amount of dollars and didn't fix it, and number two charged even more money but did fix it. And that goes to your credit card company, Discover, MasterCharge, Visa, you know, whatever, and you let them handle that. But Auto Dynamics, you don't need to worry about that, because they're not that kind of a shop, but they're really, really good at what they do. Again, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. When it comes to oil changes and your owner's manual, those are the issues that I like to talk about, because nobody talks about that. And what's important is that the clock on your oil changes sets everything else up. So if you go in for an oil change, what should happen at the oil change is we should change your oil and your filter, and we should give your car a very thorough inspection. We should check the tires. We'll look at the door sticker on the door, and it'll say these tires need to be at 32 PSI, and we'll check them all, and if they're higher, we'll drop them down, and if they're lower, we'll bring them up. But 32. We'll also look at the sticker, and it says you have a 225/75/15 tire on this car, and we'll make sure that you have that tire, and we'll check, and then we'll look at the tread of the tire and make sure that it's wearing evenly across the face of the tire of all along the tread surface, or the outside edge of both front tires are worn a little bit more than the rest of the tire, which means we need to rotate them. We need to get the front on the back and the back on the front. Because when your tires steer, when you steer your car, the front tires lay to the right and lay to the left, and we wear the outside edge of the front tires. So a tire rotation, you just look at the front tires, and if the outside edge of both front tires is rounded and the backs are nice and square, it's time for a rotation. That's all. You can look at that yourself. You can look at five cars in the Bash's parking lot, just walk around and just don't be obvious about it. Look at five front tires on cars and you'll see what I'm talking about. The outside edge, the tire lays over when you turn right or left, and the outside edge is what contacts the ground. So when we look at your fluids, almost every car made in the last 10 years or more has about 100,000 miles stop for most of the fluids, the cooling system, the transmission, the transfer case, the differential, the brake fluid, the power steering fluid. All of that stuff is going to have around 100,000 mile. Let's drain it and put new fluid in it. It's in your best interest. Let's not lose sight of what 100,000 miles is. 100,000 miles is four times around the equator. It's 25,000 miles around the equator. That's four times around the world. Let's not lose sight of that. What really happens that wads up my underwear is my industry has a bad habit of telling you that that's a 30,000 mile call. We need to change all those fluids. Mark's wrong. There's 30,000 miles. It was 30,000 miles in the days of old. It was 30,000 miles in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. It's not that way now. We have far superior oil than we ever had back then. We've got oil that, I mean, on my truck, I go 12 to 15,000 miles on my diesel truck on an oil change, but I use a synthetic blend, or I use a synthetic oil. So there's a difference now. We have conventional, which is what I call Fred Flintstone oil. That's the oil that our mothers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers used. So that's Fred Flintstone oil, and it has an oil change interval of 3,000 to 5,000 miles. We have a semi-synthetic, and that's called a blend. So it could be 50-50 of a conventional oil and 50% of a synthetic oil, or it could be 75-25, or it could be 65-35. Nobody knows. Who cares? A blend is a blend. It's half conventional, Mother Earth kind of oil, and half synthetic, a man-made oil. And then you have synthetics, and those go from 10 to 20,000 miles. I know a lot of you are real nervous about going that long, and I agree. I hope in that 20,000 miles that you pull into an appropriate tire store and say, can you check my air pressure in my tires? And you don't go 10,000 miles without having somebody check your tire pressure. I hope so you don't go 10,000 miles before somebody checks your oil and your transmission fluid and your power steering fluid and opens up your hood and looks. But we have customers who bring it to us every 3,000 miles and they say, I'm not due for an oil change, but can you just check underneath the hood? Like the old gas station days. Yeah, we'll do that. So will a lot of other shops. You don't want to do it on a Friday morning or a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but to stop by a shop that you've done business with before and just say, you know, remember the old days in the gas station? You opened up the hood and you checked all the fluids and the belts and the hoses. Would you do that for me? You know, it's an opportunity for the shop to just look good and feel good because they'll, Joe, come here. Would you take Mrs. Jones outside and she wants you to just thoroughly check the underside of her car or the under hood of her car. And while you're there, just check the tires and see if they need to rotate and then maybe air them up. Would you do that for me? It's no big deal to do that. Obviously, you better be a customer if you do that to us. But you can go to a tire store like Discount Tire and ask them to check the tire pressure and check the tire wear, and they'll do it for you for free. So that's kind of how it works. We've got a caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Tim.
Tim, good morning.
Oh, hi, Mark. I was listening to you, I don't know, maybe it was two weekends ago, and I kind of caught a middle of a conversation. It sounded like you were talking about extended warranties on cars. And
yes.
I'm about the point where the warranty is expiring on my 2017 Honda, and so I'm looking at whether or not to get an extended warranty for the car.
Okay. I don't like them at all. I'll give you the stereotypical, you bring your car in and, you have a power steering failure and let's say the pump is leaking profusely. So we call your aftermarket warranty company and they're going to send somebody over to look at the car to verify that we're telling them the truth. And he's going to check your VIN number and your license plate and hopefully you'll have your policy number and they'll verify that this car belongs on that policy. And then he'll look it over and lots of times it's at that point the crash happens because he says, have you serviced this car its whole life? And I'll say, I don't know. That's a good question for your customer. Well, the fluid's dirty. Okay. Yeah, so we're not going to pay it. Obviously, they haven't had the power steering fluid changed. And then I say, well, how often is it supposed to be changed? It's supposed to be changed every 30,000 miles. okay, well, let me get the manual. I don't have time for you to get the manual. Well, let's get the manual to see how close you are on this car. Let's get the manual out to see if you're right, because if you're going to deny the claim because you think that this is a 30,000-mile service fluid change and it's not, there's likely to be some problems. I don't care about problems. She should have changed it at 30,000 miles. I'm not going to let you replace the power steering pump that's leaking. And besides, you can't prove. And I say, well, wait a minute. How do you know that the fluid caused the leak? Maybe the seal failed. No, fluid causes the leak all the time. This is the kind of conversation we have. It happens all the time. And you got some guy that comes in that his whole job is to find a couple of reasons why we don't cover this. It has to do with the maintenance history of the car. It has to do with, oh, well, clearly look at the fan belt. What's the fan belt got to do with the high pressure hose on the power steering? Well, look at the fan belt. You can tell that it's the size of what? Your shoelace? They obviously are steering and driving this car hard. So you're going to void the warranty on the power steering leak at the pump because the fan belt looks like a shoelace? Are you kidding me? It drove in here, buddy. It'll drive out on that shoelace. I'm going to bring that to her attention, but that's not the cause of the leak. That creates heat. You're so full of... come on. This is how we this is what we deal with every day of our lives. And after, just take the money, figure out how the warranty works and how what your cost is, and take the money and put it in a bank account that you're going to invest in interest and stuff like that, and just pay your own. There is some credit union companies that have a different relationship with these kinds of aftermarket contractors, and Desert Financial is one of them, and then there's also another one, and I can't think of its name right now, but they sell a lot of these policies, but here's the deal. They walk the dog. So the credit card company can get involved, or the credit union can get involved, and they can tell them, you need to cover this, okay? And typically with an inspection by a bunch of experts and all that kind of stuff, they'll go the extra mile to get to accomplish the goal if that's something that needs to be done. And they also, it's important to know this, there is a kickback associated with this kind of a relationship. And so I'm telling you, I'm quite sure that there is a certain amount of money, a small amount of money, to every policy sold that ends up in the coffers of, let's just call it the ABC Credit Union. Then they can use that money, and I'm told that they do, and I believe that they do. They can use that money for the ones that where the tide didn't go to the runner. So this lady was 10,000 miles late on her oil, or on her cooling system. Her radiator's in terrible shape. Maybe if she'd have done her cooling system flush 10,000 miles ago, we wouldn't have to do a radiator. And I'm told, and I've seen, and I've heard from other shop owners, that oftentimes the credit union will step up and just say, Mark, take care of it, and we'll pay you. And so he'll still have the deductible associated with that transaction. But all in all, I've never seen anybody raise their hand and say, I got the better end of the aftermarket warranty deal. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't like dealing with them. I don't like dealing with their representatives. I don't like their reasoning. And I don't like the idea when they want me to be the bearer of the bad news. You need to tell your customer, blah, 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 blah. No. You call them Mr. Flappy, and you call them and you tell them what you're going to do. You tell them, no, I'm going to decline your warranty. No, because you have a fan belt that's a little bit worn or a lot worn. You tell them that that creates heat. And better yet, I'm going to call her and tell her, you ask him to put everything in writing. Because that's the stupidest thing he could do, would be talk about that the fan belt's getting hot and cause the front seal on the water pump or on the power steering pump to go bad. Get me wound up about these kinds of things. Anyway, I'm not a fan, and I don't buy them, and my family doesn't buy them. I don't tell my customers to buy them, but obviously they're okay if they decide to buy them. And I will work with their aftermarket insurance company as well. I will always work with them. And sometimes we can overcome our differences. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back to the second hour of Under the Hood. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12 talking about car repair issues and tires and oil and coolant and air conditioning systems and codes, engine codes and and all that kind of stuff. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we have David on the line, and David, I'll be right with you, I promise. Blackwell Auto's up at 40th Street in Greenway. Tom is a good guy. He knows right from wrong. We all, most all of us share the same kind of thought processes about what's best for our customers. And in order to, for me to do, talk about you on the radio, you have to have been in business for more than 10 years. You have to have a perfect, a Better Business Bureau record. And when you go out there in the middle of the cloud and start looking at Tom's shop and my shop and everybody else's shop, you'll find a couple of people that are not happy with us, but you won't find 30, 40, 50 or 100 or 150 who gave us terrible ratings. So you, that's really the qualifier right there. But Blackwell's a good guy, 40th Street in Greenway, just north of Greenway on 40th Street on the west side of the road, and he's been there a very long time. David, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, I just, first when I first tuned in after the gym, I like, oh, I must be getting like a best of show because you were doing the oil, and it was like verbatim that every time I listen, you have somebody ask you that oil question, and you're like da 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 da. So I had to like wait till that next caller came on. And you're like, oh, he is live, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then you went into the warranty. I go, I've heard this story before too.
it's a common question.
And this may be one I hadn't heard before though. Is I just bought a brand new 23 Kia Soul. And it's got the electronic helper stuff, I call it. Like, right now, I'm going to pull up and stop behind this car, and my car is going to turn off. And, you know, to save gas, I guess. And the same thing, I'm used to having the little mirror on my side mirror to see that blind spot. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid to put it on because it's got all the sensors to tell you if the guy's in the lane next to you. Will putting that in the corner affect those sensors?
It could, and here's how you figure this out. You just use a Band-Aid and you cover the four corners of the mirror one at a time until you get the computer squawking that says, I can't see traffic, I can't see traffic. Then you'll know where the sensor's at, and then you'll know where not to put your mirror. That's it.
Okay, because I love that little mirror for seeing my blind spots. I've used them forever.
Now, there's some guys that will...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's some guys that will just make a bracket, you know, on the outside of the mirror and hang one of those vertical. They're about a half inch wide and they're vertical about 2 inches. And they'll hang it on the outside of the mirror that not does the sensors. But you can do that. I would start with just covering the whole mirror and making sure that it's lost sight of what it says, and it'll tell you immediately after you get driving. Then you can just peel horizontal strips off of it until you get the signal you want, or you can do vertical strips off of it, but you'll be able to find the sensor. And yes, you can put one of those blind spot mirrors that give you more of a convex view.
Right, because I'm a computer guy too. I've been in technology. And there's part of it is like I just don't always want to trust it. I want to look. I want to eyeball too.
And I'm with you.
The automatic assist. Now, I've turned it off. I went in and found it and turned it off where the automatic lane. Am I a dodo? Am I going to be the guy that, like, said, I don't want to wear seatbelts because I might? Or is that a good thing to leave on and let it actually help me if I get a little spacey at 66?
So you're talking about lane departure?
Yeah, like it's supposed to tell me, like, and then it'll actually give you a little nudge to go back.
Okay. I like lane departure, and I'll tell you why I like lane departures, because my grandkids are just starting to drive, and we're buying them cars that have start-stop like you have. Yeah, the traffic light, the engine dies, and then you touch the gas, and it goes. And we're also dealing with all these other things. But, you know, our fear as parents and my fear for my staff, which are all grown men and women, is they're on the phone when they're driving. And when they're on the phone, they're not paying attention to what lane they're in, and they're looking somewhere else, and they're looking at the phone, and they're laughing at the picture, and their eyes are just diverted, their attention's diverted, and when they start walking out of the lane, I think that's a good thing. So I don't know, you know, it is an aggravation sometimes, and especially if it's raining like crazy and it can't even find the lane markers, then it's going to be yakking at you and stuff. So I'm sure you can find some, if you're a computer guy, I can tell you there is somebody that makes something that plugs into your assembly line data link, your link underneath the dash, that allows you to go in there and mess with those settings. I would be very careful. I would change one thing at a time, and I would take pictures on my way in and make pictures on my way out. But I can tell you now, I know somebody who just bought a new Jeep Rubicon pickup truck, and the start-stop on the diesel option was just driving these older folks crazy. And so my son was able to find a programmer, and you plug it into the assembly line data link, and you just disable it. Now, there is a button on this new Jeep that you can disable it for this trip or this time, but it resets every time you go through a key cycle, which is an aggravation. But when the programmer was used, it just took it completely out, and it no longer stops when the engine no longer stops when you come to a traffic light.
And I kind of got used to it because I have that switch where it turns it on and off, turns it on and off. And with the automatic stop, I finally, what it's done is, though, is it slows me down from rabbiting.
Yeah, it does.
The car in front of me is going to. And so, you know, it's probably a good, I've actually left it on the last one. I told my wife that. I said, you know, it's fixing that left, that right foot of mine a little bit. Because now that car moves, I see it move. I got to take my foot off the brake without stomping the gas yet, waiting for it to rev up a little bit. So that part of that thing turning off is actually, I've learned to like it.
And there, my wife likes it. She says it doesn't bother me a bit. She says, I'm okay. You don't have to do it. She says, my fear is, as I pull up there, then all of a sudden the dash lights come on, the check engine light comes on, and now I'm scared to death. I don't know what's going on. So she said, just leave it alone. And it does make between 1 and 2 miles per gallon difference in the big picture. Not looking at it day by day or week by week, but in the big picture, it's going to make a difference. But it's another emissions control device. And to be perfectly honest with you, the amp on the starter and the alternator and the electrical system to start this thing at every traffic light is a lot bigger than anybody's ever seen before, and we're happy to see that because now we're going to use that starter 10 times more than we ever did before. And so we're going to have something that's a little bit more robust, and right now we're seeing that and we're happy with that. Okay?
Okay. Well, perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your day.
You're welcome, David. No problem. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Cole.
Cole, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. I got a question about, I have a Toyota Camry 2003. It has about 183,000 miles on it. My check engine light came on in yellow along with a VSC and turn off lights on the dashboard.
Okay.
So I called one of your shops, and the guy was really nice who answered, and I said, did you just get gas today? And I said, yes. So he said, go put your gas cap on again. I did that. And he goes, drive around for a couple of days. So I did that, and it went out. But now it happens, like every time I get gas, this light comes on again. Is there something I can do to stop that from happening?
Well, are you tightening the cap until it ratchets?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I guess, this is a guess.
Sure.
I would probably go to one of the auto parts stores, O'Reilly's, AutoZone, something like that, and I'd get a new gas cap, and I'd probably look for a Stant brand. But if you can't find a Stant brand, ask them what most popular brand that they sell.
Okay.
And then you could take, if you want, you can take the gas cap off that you have right now and take a little bit of petroleum jelly on the O-ring and just put a little petroleum jelly on it and put it back on. The car has 183,000 miles, so it's been around the world 8 times. The gas cap's been on and off a lot. And I'm thinking, and the petroleum will cause the O-ring to swell just a little bit. And, you know, so I'm thinking about all these different moving parts. First of all, it's nothing to really worry about. I know you want to fix it, and I know you don't want the code and a check engine light on. It is related to the, it's more than likely related to the gas cap itself and the neck. But, I'd try the oil or the little petroleum jelly first. And I would make sure when you tighten it, it ratchets. It clicks 2 or 3 times. Are you doing it that way?
Yeah, I am. Because that's what he said. He goes, you have to make sure it's tight. So I've been doing that. And then I go out and I take it off and turn it back on and put it back on. And then I drive around for about a day. And then it all goes, the lights go off again.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Do you stuff the tank by chance? Because if wait a minute before I tell you that, I always do. So I'm not going to condemn you. But do you stuff the tank?
I'm not sure what that means. I apologize.
Click, 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 and fill it up until you can see the gas coming up the neck.
Oh, no, I fill it up and then I go one more time until it clicks. So
okay.
Kind of. Yeah.
A lot of times people will, like Mark, will click, click, click until they see gas in the neck, and then they go, okay, I'm full. And by that time, you've usually flooded some of the sensors on the top of the tank, and that will cause all kinds of problems that will go away in time. I didn't have it when I filled up. I have it now. I stuffed the tank. I'll deal with it later, or it'll go away later. But in your particular case, you're a one or two clicker. Once it clicks the first time, you do one or two clicks. That's fine. There's no harm in that. There's no harm in that.
I thought I'd just do one more until it stops again. Okay, I will do that with the Vaseline. That sounds, or petroleum jelly. Sorry, no names. But
don't use the jar of Vaseline in your wife's side of the bathroom. Because your greasy fingerprint will still be there when she goes to use it again. And so, or better yet, do this. Go into hers and take a Q-tip and just kind of go inside hers, cover it back up, and then take the Q-tip because you're going to need that to put it on the O-ring of the gas cap anyway.
Ah, there you go. And that way there's no trace. It was me. That's right.
That's right. Tell her it had to be your boyfriend when you were gone yesterday.
Very good, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Cole, you bring out the orneriness in me, and my wife and I have been married north of 45 years, and she says they have no idea what you're like to live with. And I said, you know what? You've lived with me for 45. You know, we're a couple years away from our 50th, and we got married right out of high school and all that other kind of jazz. But she knows what the smell of gas is. She knows that when Mark undresses in the barn and brings his clothes into the laundry room, that she doesn't want to go in there within an hour or so because he's washing some clothes that are smell like gas or oil or whatever. So it's just one of the things that is being married to the car guy. 602-508-0960. We have five lines. They're wide open. I can heel gear my engineer, my operator, the guy that makes me hit all my marks. I can hear him snoring. So if you call, he'll have to shake his head and then answer the phone. So 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, all but one, actually, 602-508-0960. And car questions, and you don't have to give us your name. You can use your husband's name's lady, or you can use somebody else's name. And basically, you just tell me what the problem is, and we'll comment on it. A minute ago, we were talking to Cole, and we were talking about the gas cap and evaporative coat, and sometimes I use technical terms, and I need to explain them better. Let me explain. Years and years ago in the 70s, and certainly in the 80s, we decided that we were going to start sucking the fumes off the gas tank. Instead of venting the fumes in the gas tank into the atmosphere, that we were going to suck the fumes off the top of the tank, send them forward, and burn them through the engine, and what comes out the tailpipe is good, clean air. That's what the plan. It's a good plan. It's still there today. It's called the evaporative system. The evaporative system simply takes the fumes off the gas tank and burns them again. So it improves your fuel economy, not by much, but some, and it's good for the environment. And so you have to have the right gas cap on your car, because when we start sucking the fumes off the gas tank, we have to bleed a little air into the system as well. It's like sucking on a straw. If somebody's got their finger over the end of the straw, it ain't going to work very well. So those are the kinds of things that happen. And a lot of times an evaporative coat is caused by somebody who stuffs the tank. So when you're filling up your car, you click, 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 click. And if you click 4, 5, 6 times, and then you count to 10, and you wait until the foam goes away in the neck, and then you click, click, click some more, then chances are you're going to end up with an evaporative coat. And the check engine light on every car is orange, yellow. That means caution. That doesn't mean stop. That doesn't mean go down to your local auto parts store and get a new evaporative system, because that's going to be $1,000. And we never do the whole system. It's a problem. But many of the evaporative system problems are caused by somebody stuffing the tank. So it'll go away if that's what you did. It'll go away. Just keep driving it. And after 2 or 3 fuel tank fulls and it doesn't see the problem, the code will go away and the light will go off. Paul, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Yes, sir. I have a 2001 Ford Sportrac, and my battery has died. I had it since new. The battery is about 9 years old, and I'm looking for a new one. I have a Sears Diehard, but they're out of business. What do you recommend?
We like Delco, and then is there an auto parts store close by you're going to go?
There's several.
Okay.
Different kinds.
The issue with batteries is that there's a lot of companies that make almost all the batteries. So the same battery can be sold in 10 different environments with 10 different tags, but it's the same battery. And the battery is as good as the weight it carries. So if you have, hypothetically, if you have a battery that's 20 pounds and you have a battery that's 30 pounds, the 30-pound battery has more lead, more plates, more acid. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger, stronger, better battery than the one that doesn't weigh as much. So I think what I would do if I were you is I'd go on to a couple of different websites, from the AutoZone to the CarQuest to the NAPA, mm-hmm. and look at their batteries and find the highly rated ones. And find the one that has like 4,200 five-star ratings. And mm-hmm. As opposed to when you look around, you're going to find some that don't have that, that have very few five-star and some four-stars and a whole lot of three-stars. And that's, I just blame a lot of that on the people because they're complaining that the battery was dead a week later. And in reality, they know now after they did their research mm-hmm. that the alternator was bad and it was never the battery at the beginning. So they already wrote a bad review on the battery, but really it wasn't the battery, it was the alternator. And so there's a problem with right. the credibility of the stars and stuff like that. But I think, too, if you just go on the website and you find out how much the battery weighs, get the most battery weight for the least amount of dollars. That's really the ticket.
Okay. That's 9 years, I can't complain.
No, and 9 years is great. Is great. Who was it just a few minutes ago that said that he had a huge amount of miles? Oh, 183,000 coal on his 03 Camry. I got 168,000 on my 2012 Dodge truck. Now, we oftentimes will sell Delco batteries. We oftentimes will sell Motorcraft batteries because Motorcraft batteries don't have to go in Fords. They can go in Chevys and Dodges and everybody mm-hmm. else's. So oftentimes we just leave it up to our parts department, and we're looking for a CCA reading. Like on the diesel, I think the CCA rating is 650 or higher. So we're looking for that kind of a rating. That's a big power, big battery-powered battery. And the diesel needs lots of amperage to fire that big motor up. And so I feel comfortable mm-hmm. with that. And usually those are things that we leave to our parts department for our customers' cars. And whatever the customer's Dodge diesels have in them is the same battery that Mark has in his.
Okay. Sounds good, sir. Thank you.
Okay. You betcha. 602-508-0960. The phone number is wide open. We have five lines, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem or anything like that at all, let me tell you something that happened to me just the other day, because I'm going to finish the last 4 minutes this way. I was driving my Bobcat up at the ranch in Payson, and as I got off of it, I left it running. And as I walked by the engine compartment, there was a rattle. So I opened up the engine compartment, and the alternator is dancing like crazy. I'm thinking to myself that the long bolt that goes through the bottom of the alternator, the pivot bolt, is probably broken off in the block. I'm really dreading that, because that means I'm going to have to drill and tap it, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life. I'm just disenchanted beyond belief. So I take it over to the barn. I raise the bucket way up real high, and I'm working on it, and I find out that the bottom mount of the alternator had broken off of the housing of the alternator, so I don't have a broken bolt. I am so happy for that, because I hate to drill and tap and get broken bolts out, because your success rate is probably 70% and your failure rate is 30%, and it gets ugly after that. So anyway, I ordered a new alternator, and today I'm going to go put it back in, but in the meantime, I had raised the boom and the bucket up high to just get it into the barn. So this morning I went out, and the boom in the bucket has settled all the way to the ground, and now there's no way to get into the cab of this Bobcat so that I can start the motor and get the bucket up. So actually what I've got a little neighbor kid that's about 10 years old, and him and I, he comes and works with me, and I'm going to put him inside the tractor and teach him how to start it, because he can get through the hole and I can't. And I'm going to have a seat belt on him, and he's not going to touch the two levers that make it move, and he's just going to take the right pedal, and he's just going to touch the top of it, and we'll practice on another piece of equipment, and I'll use him to get inside this mess I made for myself. But the rest of the day today. I'm going to be working on the Bobcat. I'm going to air up all the tires, check all the fluids. I'm going to see if I can figure out how come that hydraulics collapsed in a period of 24 hours. And I get the alternator on, and I also notice that the cooling jug is empty, and it's all full of trash, and I'm going to clean that out and put a 50-50 mix of coolant in it, and that's what I'm going to do today. Just like the rest of you that are working on your cars, I'm doing the same thing. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. If you want one, grab one now. 602-508-0960. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. That means that I have passed all the automotive tests, and I've done it again and again and again. And as a master tech, there's nothing I haven't passed. I've done transmissions and power steerings and engines and fuel systems and ignition systems and engine codes and diagnostics and front ends and transmissions and brakes and master cylinders. I've done all of that. And I've also owned a shop, my own shop. Well, I worked in a gas station in 1968 and got married in 1972, became a policeman, and I left there in 1979 and opened up a gas station in Ahwatukee. And from there, I've been in the car repair business since 1979. So I do have a large amount of experience. And in addition to that, I no longer do consulting. Within the last 6 months, I've decided I don't want to do that anymore. But the consulting with insurance companies, law enforcement people, the county attorney, all the people that would hire me to answer a question for them. The seatbelt, the black box says that the seatbelt wasn't buckled, but we found it buckled around the person who had deceased. And can you explain that to us? And yes, that's something I can explain. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We have open lines available if you're interested. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We've got two mics. We're going to do mic one, who called in first, and then mic two. So, mic one, you're up first. How can I help you?
I've got a 1982 K5 Blazer stock. It's stock, and I've had it for a long, long time. Carburetor. Every time we go out to start it and run it, carburetor, you know, it takes forever to prime it, get it started. And then when it's running, it just smells like fuel, and it just never clears itself out. It just, I'm thinking, can I switch that out, or can I switch it out to like a fuel-injected system where it always have, it didn't need primed all the time, it would run cleaner, it'd run better. Versus a carburetor.
Yes, you'll spend thousands of dollars putting either port fuel injection on it, which means changing the intake and putting eight injectors in there, plus you have to put all the electronics in there, plus you have to put an electric fuel pump in the tank, then you have to feed pressurized fluid fuel forward. You could also use a throttle body, and they make a kit for that as well. So, yes, you could change it. But which carburetor does it have on it now? Does it have the Rochester 4-barrel?
The front, yes, 4-barrel, and I took it off and took it over to the carburetor shop over there on McDowell and I-17, and he rebuilt it and got it all running and put it back on there, and it still never does it, the 4-barrel, and it never drops down right, and it never, it smells. It always fumes. Yeah.
All right. I want to tell you, in my head right now, my hard drive is spinning at 50,000 RPM because we see your issue, we and other shops see your issue all the time. And when you take the carburetor off and you rebuild it, no matter who rebuilds it, and puts it back on, there's three possibilities. It's better, it's worse, or it's the same. That's always the way it is, no matter what. So if it's the same as it was before, then the carburetor's not the problem. Now, let me ask you a question. This is right hand to God. How often do you steam clean the motor compartment?
Once a month.
Okay. Okay. For the rest of you wives out there, be glad you're not married to this guy, because I do it even more often than him. You know what I think?
I drive her crazy.
I would love for you to take that to I'll give you the names of a couple of guys, but here's what I want you to do. It's got an HEI distributor in it, doesn't it? Okay, I want you to take the distributor off, and I want you to grab a hold of the rotor, and the rotor should spring one way and then and come back. Spring one way and come back. I want to know if the rotor underneath the rotor, as you take it off, is these two butterflies, and as the rotor spins faster, the butterflies advance the timing and it moves the rotor and da 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 da. All I want you to do is put your finger on the rotor and just rotate it counterclockwise and clockwise, and I don't want it to not move. If it not moves, you have no advance, and you've steam cleaned the engine so often that you've rusted that distributor advance, and it's set in nothing. I'll bet it never pings. I'll bet you could advance the timing where it would never ping, but it would never start because there's too much timing in it, and so when you go to hit the key, it goes wrong. That's all because you got too much timing in it. So this is a problem that's not related to what you think it is. This is a problem that's just, you have to track it down. And the HEIs, and when you start talking to a guy like you and me that steam cleans the engine a lot, it's just a given. Now, you got a couple of choices. You can take the distributor out, point the coil straight forward, or the distributor straight forward, tap it until the rotor points straight forward, take the thing out, disconnect the ECM or the ECM on the side of it, and then you can take it apart and clean it up and get the mechanical advance to work, or you can take it down and just get another distributor and that's been rebuilt and put it on. If the weights and the rotor don't spin, don't click or don't move, they're spring loaded. There's lots of other things too. There's PCV valve problems on those old, and I was born and raised with your truck, and my first truck was a 76 Chevy pickup. That was the first year, 74. That was the first year they put electronic ignition in it. And it was really, really neat to learn all about that. But in your particular case, I just think you're working on the wrong problem. You thought it was this, and it's really not that. And I'm thinking it's the distributor, and I don't think, and especially after they rebuilt it, nothing changed, except you still have this problem, but the drivability didn't change, it didn't get better, your fuel economy, the rotten egg smell went away, the hesitation went away, none of that happened, which means it was never the carburetor.
What part of town
do you live in?
I'm up in Cape Creek.
Okay, Blackwell Automotive would have no trouble on a 1 to 10 scale. This is about a 3 or a 4 for most of us old guys with gray hair. Blackwell's bald, so he doesn't have any hair. But I'm just teasing all of us that have a small amount of hair on our head. But this isn't going to be tough for some. What really needs to happen is, as you say, I want to drop by Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday in the morning. I want to take one of your techs. I promise not to have him for longer than 10 minutes. I can demonstrate the problem perfectly to him, and then I'm going to drop it off, and you're going to call me with the diagnostic fee, and then you're going to call me with the repair. That's how it works.
Bingo. You said Blackwell?
Yeah, Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway.
40th Street, Greenway. Gotcha.
Yeah, now right, are you closer to the I-17?
No, this 40th Street Greenway would be wonderful. No, that's not a problem there. That's not a problem. I just love this because now we're looking at the right problem, not fighting with, you know, a pushing and pulling here on the wrong product. And so here it is, timing. The timing is off. And so, you know, and I've never messed with that distributor at all. I never even touch it. The old points and all that, I forgot all that stuff. So I'm gonna call these guys. Thank you so much on that.
Well, that's wonderful. Your 82 has an electronic, it's called HEI, high energy ignition. It's got an electronic ignition distributor in it. And when I ask you if you steam clean the engine, you tell me once a month, well, 1 and 1 equals 2. But you and I are cut from the same cloth. All right?
Oh, golly, yes. And then my second problem with that is that when you have the back window down in that blazer, and I've seen others with this problem too, the fumes of the vehicle circle back in the back of the cab of the truck, and that's all you smell is fumes. You can't travel down the road with your back window rolled down because the fumes. And so I put the exhaust going out the side. That didn't help. I got a fin in the back. I don't know what to do with that. It just You don't dare roll that window down and drive down the road because you'll die of carbon monoxide.
Okay, but now we're moving into a carburetor issue because this 85 has a catalytic converter on it, and this 85 probably has an air pump on it, and this 85 shouldn't have any fumes at all. You shouldn't smell nothing when you're 10 feet away from that exhaust pipe and the guy's revving the motor up. You shouldn't do that. Has it passed emissions in the last 12 months?
No, because I live so far up in the mountain, I've got old insurance on it, so I don't have to pass emissions.
Okay. Tell Blackwell that part. Tell Blackwell that too. Tell him that there's two issues. Number one is issue number one. Here's the symptoms. And issue number two, the back window down. I'm smelling lots of fumes. Have him work on both of those. They could be related. Does that have an oxygen sensor in it? An 85? Does it have a carburetor with an oxygen sensor?
This is an 82. It did. I don't know if it's still hooked up. All those hoses and stuff, I don't know.
All right. Well, this can be reincarnated easy, and we've done this a lot, so has Blackwell. And so to put it back the way it was with the oxygen sensor controlling the amount of fuel that's being dumped down the throat of the engine, that's a real benefit. That's a real benefit. So the O2 sensor is sitting there on a 1-5 scale, and when it's at 2.5, I'm a happy camper, and the computer's controlling the amount of fuel that's going to the motor and the coming out the tailpipe. That's a beautiful thing. There's nothing wrong with the ignition and fuel delivery systems of the trucks of the 80s other than everybody threw them away and disassembled them and put them back the way they were in the 70s because it's better. It's not better. Those can be made to run every bit as good, every bit as strong, and a little stronger than the ones their predecessors in the 70s. Got to run. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mike, I had two mics, and I didn't get the second. I'm going straight to him right now. Mike, number two, I'm sorry. It took me so long, and we got long-winded there, but you have my full attention.
Hey. I've replaced my shocks and the front struts. And how do I get rid of those from a homeowner standpoint?
Okay. You don't want front struts on your car?
I need to get rid of the old ones.
Oh, how do you get rid of the old ones?
Yes.
Oh, you can throw them away.
Just put them in the trash?
Yeah. Yes, that's what everybody else does. Yeah, there's no such thing as a company out there that comes and picks up your old struts or your old oil-filled motor mounts or anything like that at all. There's some people that would drill a hole in them and drain the oil out of them. If they're gas, that's kind of dangerous to do that if they have gas inside of them. But if they're a liquid, drill a hole in them and then throw them in their metal bin so they get, 10 cents a pound or something like that for 1 cent a pound for their steel and stuff. But it's okay if you put that in the dumpster. There's nobody that says, we don't know what to do with old starters and alternators. Just throw them in the dumpster. That's it. I don't know what else to tell you.
Okay, well, that eases my mind. Thanks so much.
Okay, you bet. And if it eases your mind, let me tell you this. We throw old ones in our dumpster, and we've had our dumpster examined by environmental people from all over, and they didn't have any problems with what we done. But also, let me tell you, I've won all kinds of environmental awards because all of our cardboard's recycled, our plastic's recycled, our aluminum's recycled. We do lots of that recycling because it's an additional income stream in the car repair industry, and so we're pretty good about that. But we also have big dumpsters and big containers for the aluminum, for the steel, and for the cast iron and all that other kind of stuff. So but most other shops in town don't do what we do, so as a result of that, their stuff goes in the trash as well, and so does ours. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Just a real quick question. How do you feel about the dealerships wanting to sell you the brake fluid change, the radiator, the antifreeze change, the fuel system flushes? Is that all excess, or is it something that's really needed?
Wow, that was big. Well, I'll tell you exactly how I feel. if you have, and I think the very first thing you said was brake fluid. We have the ability, we have equipment, we have stuff that we can use to determine if the brake fluid, the moisture content in the brake fluid is in or out of specification. We have that.
Okay.
So there's no question about that. And so somebody can look at it, and there's different colors of clear, and there's different colors of brown. Man. And I have been a part of a bunch of guys just testing out the hypothesis. It can be, look like coffee and still pass. I don't care what they say. It can look like coffee, weak tea, and it'll still pass. So we're looking at the moisture content of brake fluid. But I am a fan because of the ABS and because of the lubrication provided and the cooling provided by the brake fluids of today. I'm a fan of doing a brake fluid flush about 100K or what the owner's manual calls for. So I'm a fan of that. Let's get on to the rest of this stuff. Your coolant, definitely a year or 100,000 miles. And if you wanted to, you could fudge that to 80. And certainly at 100,000, after 100,000 miles, you need to have the cooling system flushed. It's just, that's the best time. And that doesn't serve the shop real well. We would love to tell you to do that every 30. I'm telling you, let me change your question. Mark, how many cars do you have in your fleet? 14. When do you do the cooling systems? Between 85 and 100,000 on all of them. What's your truck like? Well, my truck's a 2012 Dodge 1-ton diesel. It's had two cooling system flushes on it because we did the water pump not too long ago, so they flushed the coolant at the same time. But it's got 168,000 miles on it, so I'm doing mine every 100. And so, and then the injector flush, the fuel system flush, this is the biggest line of BS I've ever heard our industry come up with. It's your car's going to love you more. Your fuel system's going to last forever. We're going to double your fuel economy. They'll suggest that, but they won't come out and say it. Oh, everything's going to be better. That's a line of BS as long as 2 yardsticks. The fact of the matter is we use that as a diagnostic tool. If you've got a problem, we got an engine miss, and we've got some tailpipe emissions, and we're running a little rich, we're going to run some cleaner through the injectors to see if it changes. And if it changes, it's because we've got one injector that's running too full. We got to figure out which one of it is and replace that injector. So, yes, we use the fuel system flush, but we don't ever sell it as, oh, you haven't flushed your fuel injectors? Oh, gosh, you're really rolling the dice. Yeah, that should be done every 30, 40, 60, 80, 90, 100,000 miles. No, we do fuel system flushes, and I'll tell you something else. It doesn't appear in your owner's manual either. So the guy that made your car didn't say, hey, we want you to flush your fuel injectors at 60,000 miles. It's not in there. So transmission services, differential services, transfer case services, all that stuff. The default is your owner's manual first, and the second is 100K, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, the dealership wants to sell me stuff that's I didn't think it was necessary, so you've helped me. Thank you.
Well, and you know, something you can do in a nice way is call the service writer and say, would you get me, I'm sure they tested the brake fluid, and would you give me the parameters and where my brake fluid was at? So what's the moisture parameters? Is it 0.1 to 0.8 and mine was 12? Or what was it? Because nobody can look at your brake fluid unless it's black or unless it's really off color. If it looks like weak iced tea, that is not an indication of its ability to do its job. And what happens to brake fluid is it's a closed system, but brake fluid is hydroscopic, so it gathers moisture up. So that's the reason why we condemn your brake fluid if it has too much moisture in it. So, and typically that's well north of 100,000 miles.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
okay.
you. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Steve. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. How are you doing today?
Hi. I'm good. You know, I'm behaving myself, and I have...
Oh, I'm sorry.
We have some horses up in Payson. We bring them up here for the winter, and then we take them back down south to the summer. I'm here right now. Mm-hmm. I'm in Payson. So I have a radio studio where I live, and so I can do my show and I don't have to drive down when I do it. So I'm here now.
Oh, that's cool.
What's up?
Yeah. Hey, I have an 04 Ford F-350 turbo diesel, 6.0.
Okay.
And this darn thing, I mean, I can drive it, start it up cold. There's no indication there's a problem running. I drive it for 15, 20 minutes or so, and the darn thing just shuts off, even when you're driving it. Just shuts off. You pull off to the side of the road, let it sit for maybe 10 minutes or so, and it'll start back up again, and then it'll do the same thing another 15
okay, does it make any
miles.
Difference where... Does it make any difference where the fuel fuel tank is at? Does it make any difference if it's a quarter, half, three quarters, or full?
It doesn't seem to make any difference.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I've never really cracked it, you know,
okay.
for that.
I'm short on time, so let me ask you some questions. So you're driving down the road, the motor just quits, and you pull off to the side of the road, you put it in park, you turn on your flashers, and you crank, and you can crank forever, and it ain't going to start, right? Right? Okay. All right, so we clearly have a fuel delivery system problem. A fuel delivery. And your 6.0 is the biggest piece of crap ever made by a diesel motor, by a diesel anything in the whole wide world. My shop has made millions of dollars working on 6 liters. I'm going to offer you something. I want you to send an email to me at mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. My son, who runs our diesel department and our performance departments, is just a diesel connoisseur. And I'm going to present his question to you, but I'm going to have your email address and he'll answer you directly. I don't want to give his name or his email address out to the public, but I'll help you. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's in the fuel system. It's in the fuel system. So is it the pump? Is it the relay? What is it that's causing this problem? And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll hook up an auxiliary gauge and tape it to the outside of the windshield and have you drive it for a day or so. And shops will do that too. If you're in Payson right now, the two shops that I really like here, and I've been up, we've had this property since 2009, so I'm no spring chicken. And the two shops up here that I really like and I really admire and I really respect is Coyote and Miller. And they're both on Main Street.
Yeah,
Coyote and Miller. And okay. I can pick and choose who I talk about nice in Payson. I don't want to talk about anybody bad. But Coyote has taken good care of my mother-in-law for many years. And the cars that I've sent to him, they fixed. And Miller has done the same. So those are the two guys that I think would be capable of your question is what's going on with my fuel system that it falls on its face? That's the question.
Right. Okay. Can I just ask you another question while you I
go got ahead.
Here? Would the be a possibility that the FICM would be bad on it?
No, because let me ask you a question. If it's full, does it have anything to does the dying and stalling have anything to do with where the fuel gauge is at? Whether it can on quarter tank, eighth tank, or three quarters full, does it have anything to do with that?
Yeah, again, I don't really know because I never looked for that type of assist. I know that it's usually in the full position.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping that I'm pretty sure the FICM, you're talking about the FICM. No, the answer is the electronic control module that controls all the diesel, the electronic diesel fuel delivery. This is not a symptom for that. And not only that is if you wanted to guess, that's $1,000 plus guess. And I think that's a bad idea. So I'm going to just put you in touch with my son. He's going to call you, and you guys can talk about it, and he's going to ask you a whole lot of questions, and he's going to make some suggestions, and then you can decide if somebody up in Payson, when talking with them, if they come up with the same kind of, hey, let's put a fuel gauge on there. Let's put the fuel gauge inside the cab for you. You monitor fuel pressure for us. Let's do this. Let's do that. When was the last time that the fuel pressure regulator was changed? When was the last time it had a fuel filter? Those are the kinds of things that need to happen. So you send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and I remember and wrote down what kind of fuel car you have, and I'll see you next Saturday.